On all three, and we'll just work on them. Okay. All right. The House Committee on Revenue will come to order. I think the first order, which is actually not on the agenda, is to congratulate Representative Co-Chair Berger on the birth of a healthy grandchild. Granddaughter?
Granddaughter.
Granddaughter. Congratulations.
Thank you. Now I'm back at work.
And now you're back at work. And with that, we'll open the public hearing on the three bills we have in front of us today, House Bill 2555, House Bill 2560, and House Bill 2548. Chris?
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Just very briefly, all three of these come to you from the Department of Revenue. And as drafted, House Bill 2548 would grant rulemaking authority to DOR to establish and charge a collection fee for taxpayers who fail to make an installment payment by the midnight of the due date. It limits the charge to an amount that is currently blank in the bill and directs that the fee shall be in addition to those described by statute, basically the penalty for failure to file a return or pay tax when due. So it's an additional fee, and it would apply to installment payments due on or after January 1st, 2012. So it's another penalty. House Bill 2555 would allow the Department of Revenue to accept electronic forms of payment, a debit card, electronic funds transfer, or credit card payment directly from taxpayers. Currently, they contract with a private company to accept those payments, and then the payments are remitted to the department. They cannot accept it directly from the taxpayer. The bill limits the size of each payment to an amount that is currently blank, and it establishes an electric tax payment fund so that the transaction fee charged would not be paid by the taxpayer. It would be paid out of this fund, basically the general fund. And then House Bill 2560, the bill as drafted doesn't do what DOR had intended, so they have some alternate language. So
we may want to wait on that.
There's no point in talking about what's drafted.
Until we hear from them.
Yes.
All right. So let's hear from the department first on these bills. Is the first one you mentioned, is that one of the ones that no one in the library? Okay. While they're coming, I might let the committee know that Representative Nolan and I asked the committee, the department to look at their compliance issues and to see if there were any things that they could suggest that would help us with the issue of compliance and raising revenue and that kind of thing. They came back with a long list of things that we might do, and 2548 is one of those. You will note that this was not a request from the governor's office. It was a committee bill based on the response to Representative Nolan's and my questions about compliance issues, and this is one of those. So with that introduction, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. And I appreciate that that explanation. Mr. Chair, actually, all three of these bills resulted from the list that we sent to the member last summer.
In response to our question.
Yes, sir.
Yes, thank you.
So, if I may, I will start with House Bill 2555, which the idea that came from line staff on this was that sometimes they will have a taxpayer on the phone who has a debt that needs to be paid, and they want to pay immediately using a credit card. And under the process in place at that time, we had to transfer that person to the service that takes the credit card payments. The agent was not able to just take that information directly from the taxpayer and have it resolved. So the suggestion was that we were able to do that by absorbing the cost of that merchant fee from the general fund. Since that time, that was last summer that we sent that over there, we have worked with Official Payments Corporation, and we're almost to the point that we will be able to act as an agent for that corporation and accept the payment directly from the taxpayer. They will still need to pay the convenience fee, but it means we won't have to hang up on them or transfer them to another line, meaning there's less risk of them going ahead and following through with that payment. We also talked last week with the eGov folks, and they are working hard on a statewide solution to electronic payments, and perhaps by the end of the year that will be in place. which can resolve a lot of the issues that were raised too. So at this time, we are not recommending that 2555 go forward in its present form.
You're ready to wait on that one because you may be able to do it some other way.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and a less expensive option.
Wonderful. And do you need authority to act in these other ways that you're describing? I assume that the e-government group can manage that themselves on your behalf.
I believe that's correct, Mr. Chair. I don't know all of the details.
Okay.
But certainly if something is needed, we could come back.
You can come back.
Even year.
All right. Any questions on this bill? Please, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, I would go then to 2560, and Chris did mention that the language as it is doesn't actually reflect the thought. There are actually two different provisions in the law that deal with the transfer of liability from one entity to another entity. And a few years ago, you authorized the transfer of a liability when a business accumulates a tax debt, shuts down that business entity, restarts a new business entity doing the same thing, the same people, maybe even the same assets, but just a different corporate entity. You authorize the transfer of liabilities in that case. So this bill really isn't needed as we have the authority in the bill. I've handed out to you some statutory language that reflects what we actually had in mind. And the other piece of the law that currently exists is that we have the authority to transfer liability for unpaid withholding to a responsible officer. The person who was liable to submit that withholding can be assessed the tax that wasn't, the withholding that wasn't paid. So the proposal is to extend that to payroll tax, which currently is not covered. And that's the second page of that handout, 267.385. The idea was to take what's in the box, the concept in the box language on page one, and have that extend to payroll tax liabilities of an employer, which currently we cannot transfer to a responsible officer.
Representative Berger?
Thank you. Deborah, so the language on page one that's in the box is current statutory language.
Chair Barnhart, Chair Berger, they are both, this is existing language
just
for both
all
pages.
Of it.
Yes, ma'am.
So it is that, what you're looking to do, but this bill doesn't get you there, is take that language and have it apply to ORS 2678385, the payroll piece.
Mr. Chair, Chair Berger, that's the concept, yes.
And it didn't get there because it just wasn't drafted sufficiently.
Chair Barnhart, I think we didn't communicate well enough, Chair Berger, as to what the idea was. These were very brief suggestions that came over.
Yes, they were.
So there is discussion going to amend this to get it to get there? Is that where we are in process?
Chair Barnhart, Chair Berger, we have not pursued any amended language. If that's the direction that the committee would like to have us take, we will do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Brewer.
I have a conceptual issue with this liability transferring. When you talk about payroll taxes, we're talking trust fund taxes, and it's treated entirely separately. And to transfer that liability to an ongoing entity, which may be reorganized, that language is kind of loose in what that means, when you may not have the same set of officers, same power and control, same all of that. So to transfer trust fund taxes to a new entity, I think is an overreach. I think that's kind of that's a bigger issue. I'm not comfortable with that.
And you're proposing something different, aren't you?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Eric Brewer, the transfer of liability from one to a reorganized entity is in current law. That was passed several years ago, and those issues did come up as to whether it's actually a bona fide sale of a business or it's the same business that's simply reorganized to avoid debt. What we are proposing is not to do anything with that statute along the reorganized entity lines, but instead to say if a corporation, for example, has failed to pay the trust funds that it has withheld from employees' wages. Current law allows us to transfer the liability for those unpaid withholdings to a responsible person, a responsible officer. Current law does not allow the transfer of payroll taxes to the responsible officer. So our proposal would be to ask you whether, as a policy matter, we should be transferring the liability for those payroll taxes to the responsible officer in the same way we currently now do with the withholding. And that is not reflected in the language of 2560.
A follow-up. So to clarify, you want to follow federal law in trust fund taxes to a responsible officer, but not transfer payroll taxes to the reorganized entity as defined.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Vera Brewer, the reorganized entity piece should not be in this discussion at all. We're talking about one corporation that remains the same corporation. The question is, did the corporation fail to pay over the withholding taxes? If they did, those liabilities can go to a responsible officer, but the liabilities that can be transferred don't include the payroll tax. So the payroll taxes would be pulled in to the types of taxes that can be transferred to the responsible officer.
Okay, so...
Now, for the purpose of this discussion, I want to make sure I understand.
Yeah.
For the purpose of this conversation, we ignore what's in 2560, and we think about a conceptual amendment that would do the things you're talking about. Is
yes,
that right?
Yes, Mr. Chair. That's
yeah, so you
okay.
can ignore what's in 2560. Otherwise, it's confusing.
It is.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Does that get at the question you're asking?
It kind of does. On this particular case, Mr. Chair, thank you for indulging me a bit.
Yeah, please.
In this particular case, I would want to read what you mean by responsible offer and the extent of liability and how long goes with it. I haven't had a chance to brief up on that. Who is defined as a responsible officer is very important, and federally that gets into a lot of trouble. Who has power and control over the trust fund taxes, who really has it and who does have it, and who appears to have it but really doesn't. That's the devil in the details on that.
That's
one.
The fun part, huh?
Yeah.
Representative
Watt. All right. A couple of questions. Number one, how broad is the universe of payroll taxes that we're talking about? Can you give me some examples?
Mr. Chair, Representative Watt, I think primarily the TriMet taxes is what we had in mind here.
And don't forget Lane Transit District.
And Lane, thank you, Mr. Chair, Lane Transit District, the transit taxes.
Follow-up. So now, on any tax liability, where the current state of the law already allows for the state to go forward and attack any fraudulent transfers if that's taken place. It allows us a super priority in bankruptcy. It allows us at some point to reduce these amounts to a judgment lien that, again, has super priority over top and ahead in line of other lien claimants and other judgment creditors and mortgages and consensual liens and everything else. So on top of all of that, it sounds like we're wanting to extend joint and several liability to officers of companies who may or may not have day-to-day operational control for unpaid payroll tax liabilities. And that's really what we're talking about here. Am I right?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wand, not being an attorney, I can't say yes to all of your questions. I think the intent is, if we have established that a corporation has not paid in the withholding taxes that should have been paid, and the corporation has also not paid the payroll taxes, if we're able to determine that an officer was liable for that action, then not only would the withholding tax be a liability of the officer, but the payroll tax would as well.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, the concern that I have on this is when you're talking about withholding, you're talking about a company that has taken money, withheld money from their employees, held it in trust to be sent to the government on behalf of their employees. I don't have any problem extending out liability to tertiary officers, okay, in that situation. You're talking about trust funds, that's one area. But when you're talking about payroll tax, that's a completely different animal, and you have to keep in mind that you're also talking about joint and several liability and personal liability of officers. And my understanding of the withholding tax doesn't require any culpability. They were an officer, the tax was withheld, the tax wasn't paid, therefore that officer is hit. Again, I don't have any problem with that policy objective when you're talking trust funds. I get a little more leery when you're talking about something like a payroll tax that is not money taken from an employee. So, thank you for indulging me, Mr.
Chair. Thank you. I mean, it is a distinction that we need to be clear about. Other questions? I have one for the committee, and I'm not asking you to commit a vote because it's obviously you can't without seeing the language, but I'm wondering if it makes sense for us to ask Chris to work with the department to get an amendment drafted to do the things that the department would like to have this bill do, and then consider whether or not we want to hold a work session on that after we've had a chance to look at that language. Is that a reasonable thing to do, or would that be a waste of resources at this stage? I think I've got probably a waste of resources, but I don't know about the other members of the committee. And if you don't say anything, I'm going to ask them to draft up the amendment so we can look at it.
Well, I think the important question here is this is a very narrow and very small piece of the picture.
Yeah.
Drafting it is fine if you can get there. I wouldn't object to drafting. But anything that is heavy lifting here, I'm not going to spend a lot of time and resources with
you. That's right. And I think it has to address Representative Eric Brewer's question as well. You know, who are we talking about actually having this liability imposed on? Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would be interested in hearing from the department. Maybe you could distinguish for us, if there is grounds for distinguishing it, the payroll taxes that we're talking about from all other types of taxes. And what makes this different from any tax? I'm trying to find out why, if we went this step, we shouldn't expand it to include a lot more taxes that corporations or businesses are supposed to pay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, I think perhaps one reason for proposing this is that these taxes are all filed on a combined report. So the withholding and the transit taxes come in on the same report. When we do an investigation and find that an employer did not remit withholding, for example, the same investigation would disclose that they also didn't remit the transit taxes. So does it make sense if we find a person who is liable for the failure to remit the withholding, does it make sense to also have that person responsible for failing to remit the withholding tax or the payroll taxes?
Hold on. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that's all fine for form purposes, but I'm talking about the essence of the device. Is the payroll tax different than some other type of tax that employers of corporations necessarily pay? That's what I'm trying to get at. Like real property tax or income tax. Why is it different? Why would it be entitled? Why do we impose this liability upon the officers when they normally be able to hide behind the corporate shell? Why? I want to know what the difference is. Otherwise, why don't we just include all taxes the corporation is supposed to pay?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bentz, I can't think of the difference conceptually between a payroll tax and the taxes you described. So if you're looking theory, it would make sense to treat them the same.
Thank you. Yeah. Mr. Chair, I wouldn't support the bill just for the reason given by the department. I can't expand the liability of the folks in charge of the corporation to this payroll tax unless we consider expanding it to all. And that's quite a conversation.
Yeah. Well, yes. I'm assuming when you say all, you would include the corporate income tax and the
Correct.
Corporate minimum tax.
Correct.
And
every tax.
Probably some other things that we're not even thinking about today.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. I think that answers my question.
I think that does.
I think it answers my question quite well, and I think that we will. At this point, we're not going to take the resources necessary to draft that amendment. Let's go on to talk about the third bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2548 is, as drafted, is pretty narrow, but we wanted to use this as a vehicle for discussion about who pays for the cost of collecting tax when taxpayers don't pay on time. and we need to do additional collection activity to ensure payment of the tax.
48.
So currently, if we are charged a fee...
which bill are we talking
about
now?
House Bill 2548.
2548, yeah. We talked about 2555.
Five?
Yes.
Oh, I wrote the wrong notes on the wrong...
on the wrong note, okay. Please, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, if we are required to pay a fee, for example, in the federal refund offset process, where a taxpayer has a debt owed to the state, we notify the federal government that that debt exists. If a federal tax refund is issued, the federal government will send us the amount of the debt, but keep a fee to cover their costs. So that fee is not coming out of the general fund. In addition, we have garnishment fees that we pay, and those are passed along to the taxpayer. But if we have just a run-of-the-mill debt and we need to set up an installment plan for a taxpayer and it takes some work to do that, and then perhaps a few months down the road the taxpayer misses a payment and we need to contact them and get them back on track, all of those costs are paid for through the general fund. So the question is, from a policy standpoint, do you think it makes sense to establish some sort of fee for collecting those debts that take an additional amount of work on the department's part? So that's the policy question before you.
Yes, we'll start at the end and work this way, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What's the interest rate that is charged on an installment payment plan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Juan, the normal interest rate right now, I believe, is 5%. If an assessment isn't paid within 60 days, that interest rate increases by 4 percentage points, so it would be 9%. So if a debt is at least 60 days old, the interest rate is 9%.
Yeah. Please. Well, so what you're saying is 60 days after the tax was due, it becomes 9%.
Mr. Chair, Representative Watt, actually it's 60 days after the assessment date. So typically if a person files the return, says I owe $500 but I can't pay it, then it will accrue interest at 5% for the first 60 days and then the interest rate would go to 9%.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
That helpful, Representative Eric Brewer.
Okay, just to clarify, so the 5 jumping up to 9 is interest, not penalty?
Mr. Chair, Representative Eric Brewer, that's correct. It's purely interest. There are penalties that are imposed for failure to pay tax. The first level is 5% for the first 3 months. If it's not paid within 3 months, there's an additional 20% that is applied to the unpaid tax.
Okay, so if I may have a couple
please,
two
yes,
follow-ups, thank
please,
you.
Yeah.
So someone on an install payment, we already know, is already struggling. Have they been assessed an installment fee to have the installment payment arrangement analyzed to begin with?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Mayor Brewer, no. That's exactly the point, is there is no fee that applies to those that need additional work in collecting the debt.
But not the collection, the actual assessment. To when someone applies for an installment method, do they pay a fee at that point?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Eric Brewer, they do not.
They do not. So we have someone on installment who's already been assessed a penalty, they're paying interest, and now we want to add some kind of service charge. Do you anticipate in your suggestion that there be any reasonable cause exception?
Chair Barnhart, Representative Eric Brewer, yes. We always would appreciate a reasonable cause exception to allow us some flexibility there.
This does not contemplate this at that time?
No. Chair Barnhart, Representative Eric Brewer, this is actually very limited in its scope, and we would not suggest that this language be used, but instead just are posing the question of whether a collection fee should be applied.
Yes, please.
This is more for where I stand at this point. I do see a need for administrative recovery when someone's on an installment basis, but to be punitive on each and every payment that may be late to me for someone who's already in a distressed situation and already assessed penalties might be incorrect. I would rather see an upfront installment fee analysis assessed, to just look and see if this is a candidate that is capable of making their payments timely, recognizing their liability, signing off that they're going to make file their returns timely, and see that upfront, and then they know what their liability is.
Yeah, and of course, the issue that the department is raising here is, having all that being done, what if they miss a payment? And then the question is, do you change it in some way or not? You know, what would be helpful to me as we talk about this issue is to get an understanding of what actually happens, what your authority is, and what actually happens on the ground. The example you gave, someone files a tax return, says, I owe $500, I can't pay it. I can give you $100 a month starting next month. What do you do? What are the penalties and interest that you would charge? And what happens then if they don't make the payment? Do you assess additional penalties? I think it would be helpful before we start adding an additional fee to understand what you actually collect, what your practice is and your authority is now to collect interest and penalties. And that might mean a table with some examples, something like that, so that we can get an idea of whether this approach makes sense or whether the approach suggested by our brewer might make sense in addition to what you're doing.
Mr. Chair, if I could respond to that, there is a model in the existing law in the judicial, which is called, in ORS 1.202(1), is called a payment schedule assessment. And their fees depend on the amount of the debt. If it's less than $150, there's a $50 fee that is charged. From $150 to $399, it's a $125 fee that's charged. And if the debt is more than $400, a $200 fee is charged. I don't have a lot of detail about how many of those that they set up, but that is a model in the current law relating to setting up payment schedules.
Thank you.
But we will certainly get information as to practice.
In order to understand whether we need an additional fee, I think it makes sense to know what your authority is now and what your actual practice is likely to be in different common examples. Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up on that point, I think you were making that the quote reasonable collection fee would be measured by the time spent by the department in trying to collect it. And so that which the chair was asking about, what you do on the ground, would lend itself to that discussion and measure.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vance, we have talked about whether or not we could establish a fee that's based on the amount of work that's done on an actual case. And it became evident that that's somewhat difficult to do. So a model that has a flat fee that applies to any type of installment sale may benefit those that are really difficult to work with and perhaps not benefit those that make their payments timely. But it's more difficult to assess what the costs are on an individual case.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a line where it isn't a reasonable fee and it becomes a penalty. And so that's always been the challenge when I'm crafting notes and putting these elements into them. And so at what point do you cross over from cost of collection to penalty? We already have penalties. So at least I think that's what the second sentence here alludes to, and I think we sure need to see what those are.
Right.
So I guess there's no reason to pile on given these people's probably unfortunate economic circumstance.
Yeah, that was exactly the issue I was thinking about. Thank you, Representative Pence. I think in order to get a sense from the committee's point of view whether this is an important direction to go, we need to know what you do now. And I suspect that most of us pay our taxes on time, so we don't have any direct experience with that. Anything else on this bill? Thank you. Mr. Martinez, did you want to be heard on 2555?
Thank you, Chairman. I think after listening to the testimony
Mr. Martinez declines. I think that's a wise move, but I wanted to make the offer. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
And with that, unless there's something else, we'll close the public hearing on House Bills 2555, 2560, 2548. Any other business to come before the committee this morning? Seeing none, we are adjourned.